Let's dig in. Up first is Karn Davidson 9. The album's called Reverence. We'll check into the track Just Because. Then Casey Golden. The album's called Present Day. We're going to check into Living Reprise. Then Randy Hexter. The new album's called Tomorrowsville. We'll check into the track Rosetta Stone. Let's dig in.
Thank you. This is the show where we play the artists that are making the jazz of today. I'm talking modern jazz today with your host, Carrie Gaffney and Jeff Williams. Up next on the queue, the Boom Ya, from the album Near Earth Objects, the track Hot Tamale, followed by Dharma Down, from the album Owl Dreams, the track East 73rd Street.
We'll be right back.
time again when we say goodbye, but only until next week. We look forward to having you join us next time on Modern Jazz Today, where we will be presenting today's artists, cutting their teeth and cutting the edge of sound. Join myself, Carrie Gaffney, and
Jeff Williams
when it's time to tune in and turn up again. We look forward to it.
Diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
If you've been feeling confused and as though everything is impacting on you all at the same time, this is not a personal, private experience. This is actually a collective experience.
There is a word for that. Polycrisis.
So polycrisis, for me, describes the production through the radical process of development itself of an expanding zone of new unknowns. So radical uncertainty is not simply a given, it's produced. It's a radicalization of modernity that we're actually facing. Mark Blythe, my friend Brown, puts it brilliantly in an article in The Guardian 2 years ago. As he describes it here, climate breakdown, of course induced by human economic development, is a giant nonlinear outcome generator with wicked convexities. In plain English, there's no mean, there's no average, there's no return to normal. It's one-way traffic into the unknown. So this is produced uncertainty. It's not a given. It's not a fact about the world. This is what I think the polycrisis term is trying to capture.
That is British historian and Columbia professor Adam Tooze speaking at the Overseas Development Institute Conference in 2023. You will hear more from Adam Tooze later in the program. But is polycrisis the right framework to understand these times? Also in this program, our health is damaged by climate change in more ways than we know. From the University of Bristol, UK, scientist Dan Mitchell points to the cumulative risks no one is counting. You need to hear that. First, can extreme climate-driven disasters change people's minds, even in right-leaning people? California Business School marketing expert Rafi Siddiqui answers. He reveals how they get you to buy more stuff. Knowing is the door to resistance. Do extreme events, from hurricanes to wildfires, wake people up about climate change? A new study out of California finds right-leaning people may change their views if hyper-disasters hit their state. Maybe this is an opening to move away from the culture of high consumption towards more earth-friendly ways. Our guest is Rafi Siddiqui, Assistant Professor of Marketing at Santa Clara University's Levy School of Business. Rafi got his doctorate in marketing. He specializes in what makes people buy things or not. From California, Rafi Siddiqui, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you for having me.
There's been a lot of debate on whether climate-induced disasters will change people's minds, including maybe people who don't believe in climate change. So far, my take is that climate disruption has not been enough to prevent people from voting for climate deniers. But your paper is not at all about votes or elections. It's about buying habits. And so to get the right framing, Rafi, could you remind us why consumption matters so much to the economy and to our future?
Yes, of course. So as you can understand, it's our day-to-day decisions eventually which can have an impact on the environment. So from, you know, switching to less plastics and inducing habits in which we look for materials which will not harm the environment, day-to-day consumption matters there. And if we can switch people's behavior in that day-to-day consumption, then it can go a long way in preventing further harm to the environment from happening. Now, of course, there are considerations where a lot of times, for example, the sustainable versions of products maybe perform inferior, or sometimes they actually perform better than the regular versions of products. They might be more expensive, for example, or they might also be inconvenient. For example, paper straws is a good example. Like, they tend to not work as well as plastic straws, and people might not be able to enjoy their drinks as much if they switch to paper straws. So there are those challenges in convincing consumers to actually switch to sustainable products. The more we learn about the possible influences, the possible interventions that we can do to actually shift consumers and convince them that it's worth the change, the better it would be perhaps in the long run for the environment.
And strangely, your study found people who lean towards conservative politics are more likely to be changed by disasters than those who favor more left or progressive views. Tell us about that, and why do you think this happens?
So if we look at the correlation between climate change beliefs and political ideology, at least in the countries that we examined, which was the United States, countries belonging to Western Europe, and Israel, we found there to be a very strong correlation between climate change beliefs and political ideology. Specifically, those who tend to be more towards the right, they tend to not be less likely to believe that climate change is having an adverse impact on the world, on the environment. So given that, these are most likely to be the people who need convincing that our habits need to change because climate change is actually having an adverse impact on environment in our world. So since leftists, by default, they have strong climate change beliefs usually, they are less likely to, let's say, move even more towards sustainable consumption after experiencing a natural disaster or after the existence of a natural disaster in their community is made salient to them. So that is why we feel like the people who are more towards the right, they have more room to, let's say, increase their sustainable consumption by default, whereas leftists by default perhaps are already at a high enough level where further nudges are less likely to have a meaningful impact.
That's really helpful. So also fascinating in your November 2024 study led by Rebecca Che, the way people react to extreme disasters also depends on regional circumstances. What did you find different in Central and Eastern Europe versus Western Europe?
That's actually a fascinating thing that our investigation found. And essentially, our investigation, like I just mentioned, that this effect, it relies on that correlation being there, that the climate change beliefs are correlated to political ideology, which drives this effect. Now, let's say that was not true, that climate change beliefs has no correlation with political ideology. Then in that case, there shouldn't really be a difference, perhaps, between rightists and leftists in terms of whether their sustainable consumption increases when they feel more vulnerable to natural disasters. And that's exactly what we found in Central and Eastern Europe. As past research has already documented, since that region has developed, most of the countries in that region have developed politically in a different way compared to Western Europe, for example, because of the post-communist context of that region, this traditional correlation between climate change beliefs and political ideology is not present over there. Now, because of that, we don't see this interaction effect over there where people who are more towards the right are more likely to increase their sustainable consumption after feeling vulnerable to a natural disaster. So, yes, so it's basically essentially because that association is not present there between climate change beliefs and political ideology that we don't see the effect over there.
And we've been talking about sustainable consumption. Does that mean buying less stuff than before or less than the average American or truly sustainable globally if everybody consumed that much? How do you define sustainable consumption for this paper?
So that is a great point. So sustainable consumption, as you said, can manifest perhaps in different ways. One is that we reduce the quantity of our consumption, that we stick to the bare necessities and we don't overly indulge. And we don't buy products unnecessarily, and we generally create less waste. The other way to think about it is that there are some products that we definitely need to buy. So, for example, we need cars for transportation, at least in most places. A car is required for people to go from one point to the other point. We need to consume food. We need to consume products which involve packaging. So when we, in this investigation at least, we're focusing on that, okay, assuming that consumers actually need these products and they will continue buying these products at a certain level of quantity, can they actually shift their intentions towards a more sustainable version of this? So if it's kind of like if I buy 10 of this item, then keeping that quantity consistent, can I at least buy 10 of this item that is actually more sustainable overall?
I was surprised to find a whole field of study into consumer virtue and consumer vice and how to influence them. Could you explain what those are?
Yes, absolutely. So we can think of virtues and vices as products which differ in terms of whether they have long-term benefits or long-term costs or short-term benefits and short-term costs. So we can define a vice as a product which in the short run is going to give us some benefits. So, for example, a chocolate cake. In the short run, it's going to taste great. I'm going to enjoy eating the cake in the moment. However, in the long run, I will be aware that, you know, when I eat the cake, it might have adverse consequence for me in terms of my weight or in terms of my health because the ingredients are not healthy. However, if I eat a salad, in the short run, we can think of it as a cost that it's not going to taste great. But in the long run, it has health benefits. The more I eat of salads rather than something more indulgent like a cake, the better it might be for me in the long run with regards to my health. So virtues tend to have short-run costs, relatively short-run costs, and they tend to be relatively higher on long-term benefits. Vices tend to be relatively higher on short-run benefits, but they tend to be also relatively higher on